Hello everyone, welcome to The Firm, episode 22. Alec, welcome.
And welcome yourself, Ryan.
We should try and normalise the intro. Should we do the golf clap bit? Hello, I'm Ryan. Alec. Okay, hello.
Hey.
you meant to go, hello Alec. The Scooby-Doo intro. Yeah, well, I'm feeling quite good. You know what? The morning podcast seems to be a lot more, I dare say, a bit more positive.
Yeah, positive. High energy.
If we do it early enough, we don't get to play a game.
That's it, yeah. We've just had two cups of coffee. We're feeling pretty good about everything right now.
Yeah, we had a bit of cake.
Yeah,
yeah. breakfast cake. So on that note, welcome to episode 22. In many ways, this episode, you're going to be talking a lot about Kingdom 4, but it's kind of going to be the last hurrah for Kingdom 3. Next episode, we're actually going to have Kingdom 4 shit to hand out.
Well, we're going to have some Season 4 stuff, you know. Perhaps not an entire guild. Not one of the chosen few.
Yeah, I know.
We are the Agent Coulson.
Left behind. Yeah. Our episode, well, goodbye to Kingdom 3 again. You know, like, hit the ground running with a guild we know nothing about.
We've been doing almost, like, card discussions as they're dropped each week. Last week, if you listened to the episode, you will obviously know, we talked about Leodis Games, a tournament we went to, how I came out on top, how I'm now officially a tournament winner, better than Ryan at Guildborn now.
I am making that tournament the Highlander 2. It's like, it's not even, we're not even going to refer to it for now, it didn't even happen. Unless
it's the Matrix Reloaded. Oh, Matrix, that's a good film. Be good if they did a sequel. Yeah, they never did.
Yeah. Unless I am proven right in time. In that case, it did happen. I fucking called it. I really want this to be the like patch that everyone refers to. Like, do you remember when Navigator came out and they were totally broken? I want to be proven so right. We're just gonna re-release the episode and people are going, "Man, Ryan, you really?"
Well, I've been talking to people, like, I was ended on a bit of a down note last week where I was just like, yeah, but was it a real win? The amount of people who've messaged me or like tweeted me going, well, it was a real win. And I'm just like, fucking yeah, mate. Yeah, I'm owning it. I'm King of Kings. I am Triple H.
Speaking of wrestling, I have a complete heel turn for me. It's gone from me going like, right, going like, Alex, you can do this, you can get top place, no problem. I reckon you could be any top 8 in the country. Checking you a tournament, well, barely fucking count. They did it really, cheating bastard. We didn't even need to get on the mic for me to do that. I was at the tournament going, you cheating twat.
If anything, you just wanted to get on the mic so you could reach like the other 3 people who listen.
Whoa, we have some download. We've even broke double digits at the point. I'm pretty proud of that myself.
What happened there was my dad was like, oh, what are you doing? Well, you know, what are you into at the minute? And I was saying, talking about the toy soldiers thing, and you sort of see the look on his face drop.
I prefer 3D colouring book myself.
And then I said, oh, yeah, I'm doing this podcast, you know, and he says, oh, you're getting many. I try to explain the concept to him over a very long period of time, having the same conversation. And our downloads started going up. So I wonder if he's doing the supportive parent thing of, like, he's bought like 6 iPads.
One person I know has already gone, oh, I've been listening, doesn't like Guild Ball, doesn't know anything about Guild Ball. I'm going, you know, just a bit supportive. And I felt bad going like, oh, did you enjoy the episode of literally, I don't know what. Yeah, for all you, for all our friends and family listening to this, for absolutely no reason, you are under no moral obligation to continue listening. No. You've done your part. Tune out now.
So the next 2 weeks, the media, sort of, the media guild, basically.
Well, yeah, there could be like a media blip, couldn't there, of all the new cards.
So now all the final cards have come out. We're going to go through the last ones. We're going to start with Smoke, because we both know jack shit about Alchemists.
Yeah, for this card, I'm not even tempted to read the last one. It seems so dependent on what the other can do. I'm tempted to just take Smoke at face value here. I kind of don't even want to mention the Kingdom 3 card.
Well, I mean, like, we know that the Alchemists are going to have a huge change, don't we? So it's in a way that we know that all these single card discussions are basically pointless. You know, because we don't know the context in which the other... We don't know their context. We don't know anything about the other models because we can't talk about it, but like Alchemists in particular, because we know that they specifically said there's gonna be huge sweeping changes across the entire guild. So I mean, looking at the Season 3 and the Season 4 Smoke cards, that is a really good exercise in how much SFG are clarifying shit. Like, yeah. If you look at the text on Chemical Breeze and then look at the text on New Chemical Breeze, it's like, I was actually put off by picking up Alchemists at one point because I was like looking through, I was going, oh, let's have a look at Smoke, let's have a look at Midas. And I was just like, oh shit, that looks like, it just looks intimidating.
I could almost, yeah, when I first checked on Smoke, I really like Maida, but when I looked at Smoke, who I think is the superior captain out of the two in Kingdom 3, just at a face looking at and value, looking at Chemical Breeze and Alchemy Mick, I could already see my future self in the Ultimate Timeline, already on the forum going, right, Chemical Breeze, it's a bit, the way it's worded and the way it's put out, it's hard to know how the AoE actually go down. Is it like putting a fresh character play down? Is it just, it's not too, not overly complicated to the point where I can't put together. But I can already see the hypothetical question coming up in my head going, can you do this, can you do that? Like, not legendary on Kingdom 3. It's so hard to put together what you actually get out of it. Because in my head, I think you naturally want to go to the most overpowered thing you can think of. Yeah. Going, yeah, anyone that's vaguely touching. Just 5 damage, whatever, I don't even care. I'll just make up numbers.
Yeah.
And in common quiet care, I almost don't want to get too much into the Kingdom 3 comparison. Because no, for me to compare it to, gameplay-wise.
Yeah, I've played across the entirety of Season 3. So across the entirety of my entire Guild Ball career, I've played 0 games with the Alchemist,
yeah,
and I've played 3 games into the Alchemist, 2 Smoke, 1 Midas. The Midas one, I got beaten 12-2. The 2 points were from Witness Me. And the 2 Smoke games, I won 1, lost 1. I lost to someone who played Smoke like perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, AoEs went down, leapt in, did a shit ton of damage to me, dove back out behind the wall of models, and I just couldn't get into them. Yeah, I just couldn't get into them again. 12-2 loss because I just couldn't do anything. I think I got 1 point. So I think I beat Flask because I was like, "You're not fucking 12-0ing me." I just killed Flask.
Exploded.
Yeah, for the win. And then the Smoke game that I won because I managed to crash forward into their lines and steal the ball as quickly as possible, and then it scored a goal, and then it just became a high pressure situation because all my models were already up there threatening.
Yeah.
I mean, if they'd lobbed it over the top of me with a pass, it would have been game over. But they kept trying to keep a hold of it to try and control the flow of that game, but I was playing the fish and I was just 2-inch melee dodging out. Tackling, dodging, gone.
Okay, for all you Alchemist players listening, we are planning to actually play the guild more. Like, again, from Kingdom 4, we're going to be hitting more, a shitload of guild, and Alchemist at the top of that list.
Yeah, it's something we've wanted to do for like 6 months, but in a way, we've sort of gone, like, what's the point?
Yeah.
So that's why we left it, but when we sort of went, this is it, we're going to start buying up all the guilds, Alchemist was the first one we arranged to pick up, wasn't it?
Yeah, we've got the full team outside of Veteran Calculus. And I'm just going to use regular calculus model. I'm not that attached to having a particular cult. But just looking at in cards like out, his playbook has been expanded a bit to have a knockdown. Nice, but the fact it's non-momentous at the very end of his playbook means if you're already in a situation... Oh, whatever.
That's how much we know about the Alchemy.
At the end of her playbook, if you're already in that situation where you're having to use that non-momentous knockdown at the end of the playbook, something's probably already gone wrong. Smoke already... you shouldn't be a melee kind of character.
To be hitting the top of the book, you've probably charged. So, my God, why Smoke charging? What's happened?
I think it's just to put the option on the table. Again, just to add a bit of flexibility. The increased attack means you're more likely to get the earlier results that are actually good. Double push, usually. In the situation, I can imagine needing a knockdown, double push usually does the trick. Like, if you're looking to do the counter attack and push him out of melee, double push will do the job. Even if you're charging to get a goal, or, you know, increase the goal, usually double push will do you. But if for some reason you want the knockdown, maybe you get a wrap and you want the knockdown, like maybe a tackle knockdown, or I don't imagine that many scenarios really going to come up, but just having it there just for the expanded tack is good. Like, okay, that double and normal momentum push is what you probably really want if you're not for some reason using fucking Chemical Breeze and Infuse, which are really fucking good now. Smoke bomb largely unchanged, the range of it's been cut down,
but that's because of the new way they always work, isn't it? I mean, it has taken an effective nerf in range.
For the purposes of it, Smoke Bomb is usually just to enable...
Just Cloud Jumper.
Cloud Jumper, or B, just to put it on yourself, like Cover of Darkness is the more common one. Kakana and Mist I immediately think of.
I think it was Strictly the Worst I was listening to. I think it might have been Vince Kirkov said that, well, because of how Smoke Bomb works now, it's literally impossible yourself out of a cloud jumper.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, unless you put it down, then actively move away from it.
Yeah,
you can't put it down and then go, oh shit, I've mismeasured that. So that's, I mean that's good in a way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And fucking alchemy and stuff like that. Chemical breeding. You're choosing any model within 3 inch of a target friendly model. But they can come with a thing where the old alchemy playfield alchemy to be just bombarding people and then trying to
AOE. Now
and
it
kind
seems
of
like,
yeah. Definitely hoping you don't get into hoping you don't have to use your playbook.
Mm.
Now it's encouraging. I imagine the other alchemist models are gonna get shit that makes being in melee range actually worth doing, or very least being near other models. Mm. And that's where chemical breeding will really come in, helping expand your condition spreading, and then you can take advantage of infuse if you really need damage. And I really love that one. If an enemy model suffering burning or poison, which there should be,
yeah.
And not to mention the thing I like about chemical breeding, you can use it to create condition. No one has to be suffering a condition already. You just need someone friendly nearby, and you can make the condition, and then you can view to take advantage of your damage dealing potential.
Mm.
And then from carrot in that push situation where if our influence to damage ratio goes, spending 2 to get 3 damage, not spectacular. But when you really fucking need it, you're going 2. Give me that 3.
Mm.
Yeah, handing it over.
Yeah, but yeah, back of the card seems very similar. Like, we still got unpredictable movement. Cloud jumper doesn't seem to have changed. But yeah, like I said, I think cloud jump has been changed by the smoke bomb distance now. So like, you're always going to be within your smoke unless you accidentally walk away from it like a dick.
The main one is momentum creation being replaced by a watch the world burn. And momentum creation, like the change seems to be from bombarding the enemy to getting up close. Like momentum creation, Ballista Hacker, and it's probably one of my favourite character traits in the game. And the reason for it is it allows you to, on that initial turn where like, you have to kick to the other team, they've got a kind of monopoly on momentum.
Mm.
Momentum creation allows you to not only take advantage of your ranged character play and do a bit of damage and get condition up, but you can keep up with the momentum break a bit then and actually make the other team sweat a bit.
Mm.
So they're taking damage condition and they not guaranteed for a turn, which is nice.
Mm.
Changing that for Watch a World Burn, which is at the end of your activation smoke, the friendly team gains MP for each enemy model within a 4-inch range of smoke who are suffering condition. So it encourages not only active gameplay, putting conditions on the enemy, but being near them, which for smoke, probably not a good idea. But the thing I like about this is that if it's encouraging you to maybe end a turn on smoke, get that momentum, try and secure your first turn, then activate smoke, do your damage, and then fuck off again. Yeah. Smoke, even with unpredictable movement, which is great against level 1-inch melee, by default you have to pick only 1-inch melee will trigger it. The smoke goes down pretty fucking easy. Not a hugely dirty captain. And then you got chemical shower, new legendary.
Seems to be just a complete simplification of the exact same thing, basically. Take away the AoEs and thrown out the conditions, but you just keep the condition damage.
Yeah, I imagine for a lot of alchemist players who have been looking at the clock on their legendary player when they really need it, going like, measure out my AoE, you can go over it, can I do that? Having to have the probably negotiation with the enemy player. Because the original season 3 legendary player, just by looking at that roll, I can already see my opponent measuring out AoE. I can already feel myself going, are you sure you can do that? Going, let's have a look at the back of that card, let's have a look at what you can actually do here. You're going like, does that count again ring if it just goes over them? Like, do I have to move now, or do you just get free damage? The new legendary is just like, yeah, everyone, do you have burning or poison? Bang, you take free damage.
So that seems to be compounding the going into season 4 with the idea of everything's going to become simpler.
Yeah.
It's going to be easier to comprehend. Like, even just looking at the back of the Season 3 and the Season 4 card just looks infinitely friendlier.
Yeah.
And then also the fact that speeding games up, I really think that this is all about speeding games up.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be to the point where clock times are going to change. I don't think they're going to change it from 45 minutes, but I just think that the game's going to be sped up in general. Is that a reaction to the fact that some parts of the game plan deck has done off the clock? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it's likely, but I wouldn't rule it out.
I think the game plan deck being off the clock is a bit overstated in some way. Even on ridiculously long time, I think I'm trying to think of the longest time I've spent thinking on a game plan deck card, and it's not really been that long.
Mm.
2 minutes top. An absolute, like, really, you know, grinding out, doing the whole poker face thing, going like, all right, I'm doing it. I'm playing the 1+1 card and putting it on, betting the farm and thinking he won't blow his 7 or whatever.
No.
Okay, I've got a momentum lead. You know, all that shit going on. I think generally, I think we're trying to make the game cleaner. I'm not even sure to even speed it up, just to prevent, like, create rule conflicting. Because not everyone's going to go on the forum. Not everyone's going to have a Dave Millington at a tournament I can shout at and go, Dave, you know the answer. Put your foot down now. What are the rules here? And he'll go, well, here we go. And, you know, in one kinkhead, I'm like, I'm as confident as I'm ever going to get. Not everyone's got that guy at the tournament who that could turn into a... If you have a real rule conflict, which the Kingdom Free smoke card is almost begging for people to have, that could turn into a 5-minute conversation of just pause the clock, what the fuck is even going on here? And it's not that what people will come to the right conclusion. It's just, even if you figure it out eventually, it's gonna, that's gonna eat up time.
And that's not suggesting that you're like at a tournament where there's someone who can, like, we're not saying that sort of thing happens when you're at a tournament and there's someone who can just go, no, this is what's happening. It's like the idea of the casual player who's playing in their living room with their mate and they're both going, we've just started playing this game 2 months ago. What the fuck is going on?
Well, I think, tournament I particularly refer to, even with experienced players, how many times have you gone, oh, I do this, and they go, whoa, that's not how you do that rule, and you go, you've literally gone, that's how I played the game my entire time I've been playing this, how do you do it? Well, we do it like this, and then you've got to have the rule conflict, and like, yeah, if you don't have someone who really knows the game who can come in and arbitrate, you've got to basically negotiate with your opponent, and that negotiation can eat up a lot of time. Not even, even if you pause the clock, if you're on a dice down situation, that could be 5 minutes right out of your pocket. I like how we're going, like, oh, we shouldn't really talk too much about smoking, turn into a whole fucking thing. That legendary, though, I can imagine some ridiculous. I can imagine the 5 models, just 3 damage each, they've already been poisoned and burning. Like, I can imagine some fucking hellish turn for that.
So let's start working back through the... in the right order. It was just wanting to get Alchemists out the way because we don't really know what we're doing.
Yeah, 25 minutes later. Yeah.
Falconers seem to have just had one change, one teeny tiny change, given Icarus the Harrier.
Yeah.
It just makes sense for, like, a model that benefits so much from being able to use a Harrier, you know.
The main thing I like about it is that it frees the Varner up. Or should it free other models up to take full advantage of their damage potential if they need to.
Yeah.
Because you can put one influence on Icarus cannon attack, probably put a Harrier down. And then you can on run to my target and Minerva just to do that. Like, Minerva's a really great model, but one of the things that really hurts her in many ways is having to put the Harrier down. So if you go, oh, run to Icarus my target, I'll put their Harrier up. And now I can free Minerva up to actually do her damage potential, get Ice Fire, fucking beat the shit out of some guys. It just opens up the team and stops them from being dead weight. One of the few games I played with Falconer, I couldn't get the goal of Icarus. We just did nothing the entire game.
Yeah, so giving him the option to get the Harrier.
And push come to shove, if you put 4 on him, if the goal run don't go your way, he can actually try and get Harrier down, do a bit of damage. Like, he can get momentum 2, not ridiculously early, right? But momentum 3 on 3 hit, I've seen fucking work. Yeah, I like him.
Other changes seem to be to Vethearn. They've put that under the Falconers because, like, it's going to help the Falconers as much as the Hunters. Played almost exclusively Hunters the entire time we've been playing. And you've never once even considered Vethearn.
The thing that I don't like about the Vethearn Kingdom Free is that even though he brings an extra point of influence to the game than original Hearn, but I'm more than happy to pay that price for A, the Blessing of Sunfather Heroic, which is just ridiculously influence efficient. Like, I've got a 10 influence team at the minute on my Hunter, but between Furious and the free character play, I have effectively 18. And I almost get that 18 back every time. Again, the costing influence being spent for me.
Yeah.
But the way I looked at Vethearn, even though I got the influence that I could spend, I fundamentally lost out. More importantly, I lost singled out. Last Light, it's a cool character trait, a character play and all that.
Well, it's character trait now.
Character trait now, but it's cool, but I'm blowing momentum I probably already don't have. Just trying to get a character play that I could get for one on Hearn anyway. And Hearn's got really good damage potential. The thing I like about Vethearn is he's early knocked down, but he, with a lunar eclipse thing where the thing clearly was, you skewer to snare someone, hit them, teleport to the other end of them, but it's within 1 inch. It's not really, you're not getting that much out of lunar eclipse Vethearn.
Yeah.
Unless they're already snared, but you have to go into melee range, you're already using movement. How much are you really getting when you teleport on Kingdom 3? At best, probably 3 inches. Maybe 4 if they've got a particularly fat bear.
See, I think this teleporting Vethearn, I think, tips him over the edge for Ohearn for me. The idea of skewering someone at the full 6 inches away, you know, you've got the width of a base, which is over an inch, and then another inch, you've gone like 8.5 inches.
Potentially, if with a Kingdom 3 vet hern, if they were already snared, then you could skewer them and teleport.
Mm.
But in reality, if they're not already snared, you need to skewer, walk up, or yeah. preferably have them in melee range. And the worst thing, if you do it on a tackle, a playbook attack, you end with him 1 inch melee, everyone gets a counter attack. But if you're doing damage and doing the teleport, you have to do damage,
mm.
and they have to be snared. Preferably, you have to knock them down first, then do damage. And if you've already moved, you turn them over. Then you've got one influence left. In even, you know, hypothetical dreamland, you've got one influence left to jog, then kick, maybe, for what you want to use it for. Even Vorhern does not suffer from that problem. Love this fucking card. Really, overall, nothing short of an amazing buff. Momentum push on one, so you can actually get momentum early on the off chance. You get a horrible result. Other than that, your playbook remains unchanged. That fundamentally remains unchanged. But last night, we made a character trait. That remains unchanged. The thing I like now is that Lunar Eclipse completely changed. You just need to do damage to a model no matter what. So they turned him from going, "I'll use Skewered first." Now he can use Skewered as the initial teleport, so you only need to be within Skewered range. He can lack light himself, blow the momentum, skewer him, then he can use the all his influence to probably knock him down, attack him, or knock him down, sprint, and then actually kick. He can get so much more out of it now. He can actually keep up with original Hearn in terms of movement, and with Winter Black and just being tidied up a bit, potentially could even get like background and all this shit. Yeah, just a complete buff. Nothing more to it, in my opinion. Like, great. That one change to Lunar Eclipse, just not having to have Snared on you and just being able to do damage, it's just, yeah, great. Like, if you were relying on the playbook to do Lunar Eclipse on a model, they by default get to counterattack. And depending on what you're trying to do, if you're trying to get a goal, counterattack, tackle, counterattack, knockdown, counterattack, whatever, it could really be ruining your day. So, yeah, I really like the change.
Oh, Veteran Siren.
Yeah.
Veteran Siren. First thing they said in the blog post is that all momentous damage has been taken from
about
the Fishy Boy.
About fucking time!
You say that like I used it every single game we played. Like,
not the thing with Corsair. Like, again, it's not like the fishermen are swimming in, you know, no pun intended, momentum damage.
Mm.
But that one Corsair activation where, it's not even, assuming he doesn't even kill them, like, likely he'll get momentum two every hit.
Two and a push.
Yeah, and momentum knockdown. Well, but almost always he's doing about 10 damage, six momentum, no problem, and you've got a knockdown model with his 2 inch melee bullying shit. Yeah, he just.
If you set him up right, he should be hitting the momentum three. He should be. With potentials for ramps.
Yeah, he should be just banging, even on really conservative middling results, he should easily walk away with a knockdown and 10 damage and 6 momentum walking away. The fact they're taking that off him just to go, like, listen, if you're playing the fisherman, you don't get to generate a fucking stack of momentum killing someone and doing good damage as well. It's not like you're taking 5 damage and getting momentum. You're fucking damn near halfway killing a lot of models and then taking all the momentum on top. If you hit the end of the playbook, you're probably going to take out a majority of models. I could not agree more with that change.
Yeah. But so instead of having any kind of momentous damage, if you kill someone within 6 inches of Corsair, then you get 3 extra momentum. So it's 4 momentum for a kill once per turn.
Yeah. How do you feel about change?
Fine. I always played a relatively football Corsair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it never really. It was. The only time I ever went in for a kill is if I already had the crowd out, Kraken was knocked down, I had a full stack of Corsair, and I was like, well, go on then. You know, like, it was like I never really had Corsair put on his fighting trousers unless it was a surefire thing. At which point I wanted the 2VP more than I wanted the momentum. If I ever want momentum with the fish, it would be I'd go after Shark with his dodges on one, or like Sakana, you know, like that's how I used to get my momentum if I needed it. Like, if it was coming towards the end of a turn, I was like, shit, I need some momentum, I need it now. I hit the Sakana button and I turned a stack of influence into a stack of momentum, you know. With Corsair, yeah, it was obviously it was nice having been able to have that much momentous damage, but it's not really how I played them.
Yeah.
You know, everything I did was to benefit the striking game. The Corsair and Kraken were there for the drags and the knockdown more than the damage. Yeah. You know? Corsair didn't often get more than 4 influence for me. You know, drag or drag didn't. It was drag, knockdown, a bit of damage,
yeah.
Or it was drag. Oh, drag didn't work. Drag, yeah. You know, like the only time he ever got the full stack of influence for that purpose was once the dragon worked at the bottom of one turn and I was going, and like Kraken and Corsair were both standing there with tentacles obviously there. So I've got Corsair with six, attack of six, two crowd out. So I was like, fine. But yeah, it's good. It's a good change. I think it makes sense. There's kind of no reason for a football team. Like, if they're trying to give that identity back to them, it just makes sense. And it also gives Corsair that nice bit of identity to himself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like football. Fish is a football team. But if you take Corsair, he's got that one thing up his sleeve, you know?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. What kind of makes you dedicate to the kill as well. Mm. You don't just get to go, I do a bunch of damage or whatever.
That's it. You've got to commit to it now. Yeah. You can't just... It's not good enough to get eight damage if they've got nine health. You know, you have to... And it's because that would have got you four momentum previously. Get to it if you're going to get your four momentum. Yeah,
well, got better fire on... You seem half like we both had a quick look at the card, and even though I don't play fish, I've been quite heavy in the fish theory crafting world.
Yeah, because you've had to put up with me.
It's my favourite part about the game. You know, just looking at cards and going, and mainly just to go, who are people not playing?
Building a list you'd never play. Yeah, I've done that one.
And I really liked Queen for Free. Mainly it comes down to Dreadgate.
The problem with Season 3 Veteran Siren wasn't the fact that she was 1-inch melee with all she did was Dreadgaze with Defense 4-0 unless she was near Kraken. For me, the problem with Vet Siren in Season 3 was that she wasn't the original Siren.
Yeah.
That's why she wouldn't make the list. If you gave me the Season 3 Vet Siren card and called her Crab... or something.
Byron.
Yeah, exactly. I'd have been fucking all over that. Going into some teams that want to scrum up, that aura for the -2 tack is huge. It's life-saving. You know, it's like a negative singled out. And you know how good singled out is.
Yeah.
And this isn't a fucking aura. It's not targeted.
Yeah.
But on the other side of that coin, Season 4 fish, they're meant to be stepping away from the fight, you know. Don't know how much I agree with that, because it's not always you wanting to make a fight, you know. If someone starts to create a scrum and every time you try and get out of that, you're being pushed back into it, you haven't generated that scrum, but you find yourself in one anyway. Changing Dreadgaze from -2 tack to a 2-inch push with knockdown. Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it achieves a similar result, you know. Yeah. It damages their scrum, but I think it, by targeting one model over, you know, everyone in an aura, I think maybe part of me wonders if it was just for synergy with the Fairwind ability she's just gained. Because you can I'm assuming it's like Season 3 and that you can choose whether you want them knocked down or pushed first.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah, then you obviously take the knockdown before you take the 2-inch push to get, otherwise the ball's going to be even further away. But it's a gamble with the scatter, isn't it? It's a gamble. I mean, always going to be a gamble. And then if she then has to move to get fair wind, if she fair winds the ball just into another free location, there's nothing stopping the other person picking it up. If she then fair winds it onto one of your models, cool. That's basically what you want. The ideal use of fair wind is moving the ball onto one of your models that hasn't activated. What you don't want to be doing is moving to get it onto yourself just so it's not just free.
Yeah.
What you'd then be looking to do there is moving it 4 inches onto yourself to then place it an inch away from you, which is effectively moving it 6 inches, six and a bit. Yeah. That's what you sort of be looking at if you unsnap it an inch away. That's probably the second best ideal.
Yeah, I really like Fairwind as a general ability. It's one of the, it's a bit of a counter to what I think probably the Fisherman's biggest weakness, which is the free ball. One of my favourite counter strategies to the Fisherman is not to even have a high defence model run off. That barely fucking makes a difference. The real kind of meat of counteracting Fishermen is to get a free ball away from them and then just go nuts trying to get to it. Because really, once after they've sprinted, they kind of don't have an answer to the free ball. So yeah, giving her a reason to go, yeah, I'll get in there, sprint, try and move the free ball up.
Yeah.
Potentially, she could sprint, try and use that ability to get the free ball to herself and then kick it back to the guy who you need. Or okay, if she needs to...
That's the ideal result. Yeah. The ideal result is that.
And if she needs to fuck up a potential striker or kind of, you got a really good, you know, a ball holder. Maybe come with a lot of armor, like the Anvils of the world. That's gonna be great again. Who, you know, who are just high armor in cover model. Who you go, that's gonna be a hard nut to crack. She can go low defense, bang, knock down, pushed, free ball. If they're near terrain, like scatter, all of a sudden becomes less of a thing. Because even if the ball budges up right next to the terrain, right next to them, you push them back, they can't pick up the knockdown, they can't pick up the free ball. So yeah, immediately just snap that up, get it away from them, and put it back into play where it belongs. Even if she leaves the ball free on her turn, like, yeah, like say you've got a model at the halfway line, you go in, knock them down, do the free ball shit, and just place it behind you. Even if the enemy can get to it, all of a sudden the onus is on them to try and push up into you and make them play more active. Instead of going, the ball's back here, I'll just leave it here.
Whatever. Yeah. And then back of the card, Escape and Fate, when she's killed, she gains a health, clears all conditions, and then dodges 2 inches. Used to be dodges 4 inches.
Yeah.
Part of me, again, thinks that this is just the speeding up the game.
Yeah.
You know, it buys you time, but it doesn't buy you as much time.
Well, it just means that 2-inch melee guys can stay engaged.
Yeah.
Like, reanimate, for how annoying reanimate is, it usually don't fuck with your ability to keep attacking. The problem with Escaping Fate is that if you're a 1-inch or 2-inch melee, or even a 3-inch melee, you know, if you're hitting on your killer, you can't kill her on your turn. She gets to go away. She's high defense model.
4 inches, gone.
Yeah, and unless you've got a character play that can follow that up, you're kind of done. And she's just grinding you out. At least this way, even a 2-inch melee can go base to base, but when she's done the 2-inch dodge, you can go, yeah, fuck it, bang, keep attacking. Yeah, the fact she can remove all conditions and then make the dodge. 1-inch melee, that'll still end that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it don't make her just, it doesn't just end the turn. They're accounting to that now.
Yeah.
And Shadow, like, fucking amazing.
Yeah, well, it's
11-inch movement.
Yeah.
Overall, I get what they're doing, and I think it's good. I think she plugs up a core weakness from the Fisherman right now. But yeah, losing Dreadgate is an ability to counteract Scrum from a poking team. We know there's some, just looking at the Cook Guild, their minus one defense, we know there are going to be some fucking hellish Scrum coming up against them. And with Corsair taking the hit he's taken, in terms of his potential momentum generation, it's going to be harder now to out-heal Scrum. So I think that minus two tack could be potentially really missed. I kind of wish, I know this new Dreadgate is clearly meant to work with Fairwind, but I kind of would have preferred the original Dreadgate and Fairwind, because
if I got to choose, I would prefer the original Dreadgate just for that reason, but this one's really good as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that it's the only reason I'm going to miss it is because I had it. Yeah. You know, I can understand, like, I think even in the blog post they say, like, the 1-inch melee zone models, you know, Siren and Vet Siren and Angel, no one played them, whereas I'm like, unfortunately, as one of the few players who occasionally gave Vet Siren a run out, don't get me wrong, I'm not a complete idiot, I don't play her as often as original Siren, but I gave her a run out every now and then, and I am gonna miss the original Dreadgate, but I can see the benefits of this Dreadgate.
Yeah, okay. But if you were playing against me, I would bring Vet Siren into my, because I'm a big fan of the free ball. Having a model on the ball, or having the ball on the model against Fisherman helps them more than it hurts them. Like, it effectively increases the range from a 1-inch circle in a position I like to the melee range of what you can reach my model. I've given like a fucking 8-inch ring, a fucking come get the ball off me. And even 6 defense models are going to put up a huge fight against your Sharks, or Shikana, who can anatomical the way in and just nab the ball for nothing. Even veteran Siren stands now, tackle dodge on one, like, charge into a 6 defense model, you're probably going to get that fucking hit.
What else I like about that is that in the blog post it said Angel gets a tackle, dodge and one.
Yes! At least she's not got 2-inch melee.
Well, it did say that the 1-inch melee model, so I think she's going to stay at the 1-inch.
Yeah, as she should.
Oh, Angel, my baby girl.
2-inch melee.
Angel, yes, they gave you a tackle, dodge and one.
The thing I don't like about so much 2-inch melee on the Fisherman is that they already get what they want. It's not like, if Shaq had 0-inch melee and had to go back to back every time, he'd likely still lose your... He double dodges on nothing. Like going, oh no, I don't get my dodge out. The 2-inch melee just added insult to injury for the most part.
Do you want me to go grab some cheese and grapes for that one?
Yeah, fuck you guys. Fuck you and your goal scoring team. With your 2-inch melee and double dodge on like 2 fucking hits. Sorry.
Stop trying to play football when you're playing football. Just stand still so Cena can kill you.
You can play football with 1 fucking inch, I don't get it.
That's what it all boils down to, doesn't it? Stand still so Cena can fucking kill you.
Just stay within 9-inch, that's all I ask. But yeah, oh, fuck Angel, whatever. Yeah. I love that model, god damn it.
Who do you want Essa's or Boiler next?
Let's Boiler it up.
That's a boiler.
This is probably one of my favourite changes so far in Kingdom 4. I couldn't have done
it's a great model, isn't it?
I like it.
A great sculpt. And he's got a couple of alternate sculpts.
Yeah, boiler's quite popular. Yeah, yeah.
He's got the he is their rookie, isn't he? And then he's got the Valentine's one. Yeah, that's quite cool as well.
Boiler, I already really liked this as a model because he's got such great damage potential with Princess. He hits momentum 3 or 2 fucking hits of anatomical. Great fucking model. And causes bleed. Mm. This guy just puts out damage for nothing at all. I think the Butcher suffered from 2 main problems. A, an overabundance of 1-inch melee. 2, suffering really hard on the counterattack.
Alright, okay. So it's not... Alright, so 2-inch melee is alright when it's on a model you want to blaze it.
2-inch melee be fine if they had... To be fair, I think if they gave the Butcher overmuch 2-inch melee, it'd be too much. But the 1-inch melee makes them suffer so hard on the counter-attack. I'd rather, if I was going to balance the Butcher, one of the ways you could have done it, is give them stuff like 2-inch melee and maybe tone down their results a bit. But it wouldn't have really fitted.
That's not their guild, though, is
it? Yeah, it wouldn't have fitted with the thing in the guild. But that was a potential fix. My main thing was, like, make knockdown more. Mm. Not, this is precisely what they've done.
Yeah.
Non-momentous knockdown earlier.
Yeah, it comes from the 4 down to the 3. 4, it's like, what is it? They say 1 and 2. The first 2 results, that's what you should base your thoughts of a model on, because that's what you're going to be hitting. The four and five, that's a good day. That 3, that's teetering just into, you don't need great luck, you just need a good luck. So bringing that knockdown from 4 down to 3 makes it more achievable.
Well, in situations where you're desperate for it, it's like you got a princess helping you out.
Mm.
In a, you know, I wouldn't even say a perfect world. In the correct Butcher's world, princess should be giving Boiler a hand.
Mm.
So you're already getting on +2 tack just for the effect. Preferably, if I really need that run, if I really need that knockdown, it's now more tempting for me to go, fuck it, I'm going to charge to push that third hit. I know it's crazy to say, but even on a charge, when you factor in stuff like defensive, 4 hits is still a big ask. Even in the 11 tack dream world, that is getting Princess and your charge dice in.
Mm.
4 hits and anatomical.
Because everyone bases, when people talk about dice mass, they base it on a 4-1 model. That's 5-1 with defensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's...
But with it being knocked down, just 1 hit, it just pushes you into that territory, like going, yeah, maybe I can get it. Maybe go for the charge and guarantee the knockdown. Because Boiler can get into such ridiculous damage territory with Ox and Princess, even just on nothing. No buff, no legendary, just +2. That's 4 momentum on 2 hits. And fuck it, I'll just charge in. I only get the 3 hits off the charge. Fuck it, yeah, knockdown. Now I can actually complete my attack. And even if he gets nothing... Fuck it, I'll take 1 hit on an option Princess aura. Non-momentum 3 on 1 hit, then bleed. Yeah, just being able to guarantee the knockdown so I can actually keep up with the attack. Oh, fucking good. And if I'm knocking it down, then reducing defense, anatomical, against all this shit. Man, I'm going to be hitting that 3 most of the time.
Mm.
Fucking potentially 4 damage going up to 5 with Ox helping you out for nothing, just having him stand there. And then if legendary's up, this guy will just mow through people, which is what he's meant to do. And then, yeah, fucking great.
I don't know if I'd charge with him. He's only got 4 influence.
It's just if you really need it.
Right.
If you just... Right. 9 times out of 10, I'll jog up. If I've got Princess helping me, I'll definitely jog up if I can. If I'm going to sprint, I may as well charge anyway.
Yeah.
But in that situation where I am desperate for the knockdown, fuck it, charge. And then lastly, the biggest change, Matt Target got a bit of a buff to distance, but other than that...
Bit of a buff? 2 inches?
Another 2 inches, but Matt Target kind of here or there. Matt Target, he can almost always look like... Constellation Prime.
Well, it's Matt Target. It's like I think you said before with when a fully stacked Ox gets pushed out. Sometimes what it kind of feels like Mark Target's there for, and well now Axe Throw is for like if you've gone in to attack someone and they've gone double dodge. No.
Yeah. Well, how any Butcher player will know this situation. I've been pushed out or dodged out on the counter attack. Matt Target, 1 dice. I didn't get it. End of turn.
Yeah.
It's 1 per turn before. Now we can actually try and get it more than once.
Mm.
In the event you get, in the very likely event you might get pushed out. Or dodged away from. Less likely now, thanks to non-momentum knockdown. But, yeah, and Swift Dance is gone because their general feeling is that the guild.
That Fillet shouldn't have 6 defenders.
Yeah, like, I can kind of play an Ox team. Swift Dance is a huge help. But yeah, for your filling of the world, who can get defend finished unfucking killable.
Yeah, it looks like they're putting the glass back in cannon.
Yeah. And giving okay, helping their cannon potential out a bit more. Which is where Acro comes in.
I really like that.
Yeah, it can change. Cost of two, can't get it on a playbook, totally respect it. The thing I like about this, it's just enough where if you do charge and you don't get out, like you would only get a two hits on the charge for Cumbrian gun, you can still go, you know, fuck it. Two momentum damage, like it will happen, or I've been pushed out or whatever. I can now use the remaining two to get a bit of damage, and more importantly, can throw it on another target and still get bleed up. Like, okay, I go for the charge, hit one model, 2 minutes damage, they push me out, whatever. They're now 2 damage and bleeding, potentially 5. He can then throw it onto someone else for another 3 damage and a potential bleed on them. But even on really middling hit where I don't get what he wants, that he can get a damage potential most of the time.
Yeah.
Really. It just really helps him out. Totally respect it. Completely what I do. And yet on the player book at the end of it, getting a momentum 4 now.
Yeah.
Just for that one, just when you really want to rub it in and you're like going, oh, then time for you with Boiler going, oh man, I really want to get the momentum, but I have no choice but to kill you. I like how, like, yeah, he's just going to be wiping out a model who have, like, yeah, all the defense like going, momentum 4 up to, I'm going to get 7.
Yeah.
And hit you 3 times. Oh, I got really no choice but to murder him flat out. Love that.
So that's momentum 4 goes up to 7. Sorry, blessings of old, so that's only 2 damage on Ebb. So
fuck that model.
So easy, man. It is so fucking easy to fucking poke you just the right way.
It's not that, right? I want you to admit it. I want you to admit it right now, right? No. I fucking, like, I can't wait for the people.
What was so good is that we were at that tournament last weekend, and so Vetsinda charged in, and we didn't know, so we played it as 2 damage from the charge, 3 damage from the, is it sweeping charge she's got? Yeah, so we played it as 2 damage plus 3 damage. I was like, I'm not sure about that, but I was considerably up. I had the ball. I was going to win in the next turn. So I was like, cool, let's
go. Go on, have it.
And then afterwards, I went and I spoke to Dave Tron 3000. And I said, how does this work? And he went, Spuddy the TO went, no, yeah, so it'd be 2 damage from the charge, and then probably it'd be 2 damage from it'd be 2 damage from the attack, 2 damage from the charge. And I'm going, I don't think that's right, because it's from one action, and the action is the charge.
That almost sounds too fair.
Yeah.
And balanced.
So we were talking, TO sort of went, right, ruling is, we'll play this for this tournament, you know, we'll find out what it is. And I went, fair enough, you know, your TO, I respect that. Went and asked the Dave Tron, who beat booped, and then told me basically the same thing. And I was going, I don't think this is right. And then he double checked. I think he put a rule query in on like the pundit Facebook group or something, and it came back. It's 2 damage from the entire thing because it acts as one action. And I was just fucking yeah.
Go. Fuck yourself. It should be separate things. For me, the rap should count.
No, it's the same action, mate.
Fuck that shit.
Same action.
Man. Fucking same hate
action.
That.
Same action.
It, like, it can't have done any action, it's just 2 damage. Like, no way. Just telling you flat out, no way around. Like, eat it. Oh, I hate that model. Can't wait for him to get inevitably nerfed when the people... I can't wait to be declared prophet of fucking Guild Ball when people turn on the guild.
You know, like, we've gone to play games, and it's been like, I've been like, oh yeah, I might run out of my Corsair 6 again, but then I'm like, but it's so funny to watch you squirm when I play Ebb and when I get my reroll.
It's not that, okay, I want you to get, I feel like you've talked yourself around and going, yeah, maybe the guy could a bit much. I think you've had like the, I don't know how to put it, like the American psycho moment where I go, no, it's the rest of the world that fucked up. And the Navigators are fine, they're fine in the context. There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong here. Like, even when I say to you shit like going, how come we played 7 games and you've had like not gotten what you wanted like once? And you go, that's fine, that's like me going, how come every time I play with a butcher I've never once gone, oh, I don't get momentum 5 damage instead of like every game. It's just, fuck that guild. Back to the butcher.
Ryan, stop it. Stop complaining. All you do is complain about the Navigators. I love complaining. The people have spoken. You know.
People. We'll see what the people say when that fucking guild comes back. I cannot wait for you guys to come back. Crawling back!
But Ryan, all you're doing is complaining. Everyone says all you're doing is complaining now.
They'll say I'm right. The law will say I'm right.
How have you done it? How have you brought the Navigators into this conversation? How have you?
We all know you did it, Alex. We all know you did it. And by the way, I don't want to... I'm putting it in an hour. No editing. If I do not hear the sentence...
So, it just comes out completely out
you
of
need to do, you know what you need to do? You need to recut all my voice. You just go, I love the navigating. They are perfectly balanced. Don't do that. I'm going to be rechecking the QR code.
We just said it in one go there. I don't even have to crack it.
You have to alter it to make it sound more edited. Anyway, Boiler. Love the character trait remain unchanged, and thank God for that. Nothing wrong with that guy. Print connect, love it. Crucial artery, love it.
It just goes to show that, like, the small changes they made on the front of his card, you know, that's all the Butchers needed.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, in the hands of a really good player, they're still devastating. Spuddy is a pundit in the Leeds area. And he just smashes Butchers out, and he smashes games for fun. I don't think I've ever seen him play anything other than Butchers.
Yeah.
And because he knows them inside out, he knows how to use the tools in their toolbox properly.
Yeah.
He gets incredible results out of it. You know, you see like top tier players, I know Alex Botts is playing Butchers at the moment. And if you think that, like, Bots is playing Butchers and not fucking running Riot with them, then you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the top-tier players who know what they're doing, using the Butchers properly, are doing great with them. It's players of sort of our tier who do struggle with, like, you know, maybe you should have secured something before going on an attack where you're going to end up getting pushed out, you know? Yeah. Maybe you attacked the wrong model. Maybe you should have set up. So that's where, like, the small touches, like the axe throw, you know, bringing knock down a touch. These things are just there to just tweak them forward to help.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. When someone a good Boiler, that 2 yards spending on the axe throw is inevitably going to be worse than your 2 attacks with him.
Yeah. You know, but it's a get out of jail free, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's not so good that it's like a replacement for attacking. So if you get pushed out of melee, you go, okay, I am taking the consolation prize of the axe throw.
Mm.
But
3 damage with blade.
If I stay within range, 2 attacks is probably still better.
Mm.
Even if I get shit results. Like, by default, 2 attacks worth of influence will do 4 momentum damage and bleed with 2 momentum.
Yeah.
Where if the axe throw doesn't give momentum but gives damage. Like, yeah, it is a consolation prize. It's just a good consolation prize to keep you on the board. Mm. For Butcher. Love it. Exactly the change I would have made.
We got a nice little taster of some other stuff. When you scroll down to the bottom of this, they've got Princess has got a character trait, Vicious. This model gains +2 attack and +1 damage to play with damage results when taking part in blow.
Yeah.
Really nice, which is one of the great things about Princess, is just parking her on someone and just being like, there you go, well, take a part in blow. But if you're, the image behind it is the Cook's Guild symbol, so someone on the Cook's Guild's going to get that as well. That's quite nice.
I can only assume it might be, maybe it might be more of a Butcher, Butcher and Cook's mascot thing. Mm. Maybe the mascot got it as well.
Yeah, that'd be cool. But then another thing about Butchers and Cooks is one of the dual guild models has got the ability Get It While It's Hot. It costs 1, range of 4. It is once per turn. But while within... So you put it on a model within 4 inches of the model who's got this. Could be yourself. While within 2 inches of the target friendly model spend 1 less influence to charge.
Love it.
So that Boiler charging to secure that knockdown suddenly looks a bit more enticing.
Yeah, with shit like Mark Target being now having that great range, now having that charge to effectively increase the range of all your models. Also, Mark Target go from being a kind of, oh, maybe I kind of want it, maybe I don't, character play to like going, ooh, Get It While It's Hot trait. I'm not just giving everyone a charge for 1 influence, I'm potentially adding 2 move with Mark Target. That makes Mark Target A, way better, and then B, yeah, charging just a no fucking brainer. Getting 1 amazing, like 4 plus attack. Getting in there, getting your great results, all that damage, all that range. Fucking love that trait. Can't wait to get on the board.
Last but not least, Esther's is Bester's.
Yeah, Esther. Okay, you know, I played the Brews a little bit.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that actually, because Brews have sort of been like your B team, haven't they? You've played Hunters, obviously your main team. Then you've got Engineers, who, I don't know if I'm completely off base here, you don't seem to enjoy, but they seem to have a special place in your heart because they were the first guild you actually bought. Then you've got the Brewers, who I'd consider your actual B team, and then you've played Union like twice.
Okay, I really like the Engineer, but they play...
Oh, so I got that completely wrong.
They just play in a way that doesn't really suit me all that much. The problem with the Engineer is that there's too often in a game I get put in basically helpless situations.
Mm.
The Hunters, the thing I like about them, and the Brew as well, is that you can get made helpless on the goal scoring end. But at some point, if they score a goal, you have to kick out.
Mm.
So you feel like you need to get a little bit of control back. The Engineer, once they start getting actually in melee, they just fall apart.
Yeah.
Really do. And that feeling of like going, I can't get the ball back, I'm tied up in melee. Even when you get stuff like goal kick, like if you're tied up in melee, you go, I can't even take advantage of this.
Yeah.
It's so hard to even get out of this spot. Okay, the 2-1 shimmy just murdered a lot of fucking engineering team. And okay, the goal scorer primarily, which I don't, not my game. The Brewers go the other way. For me, they've got some just flat out fucking American model. They don't have the modularity of movement that's great in goal scoring. But, like, shoot, you know what, I shoot better after a beer on Friday, like 10-inch kick and bigger, so manoeuvrable. Not manoeuvrable, but I mean, he's got range, he can do a lot of shit. I love that. In the Brewers team, I just fundamentally, Ekton, I get it. I've looked at the card, I don't think a clean free Ekton is bad. It's just, I look at the card, I get it, I prefer Tapper.
Yeah, it's a personal preference thing, isn't it? You're not saying that she's objectively not a good model, because of course she is.
Yeah, you know? I look at the card and go, oh, I totally understand, but I understand Tapper more, and he plays the game I like to play.
Yeah.
You get in the mix, you knock people down, you get commanding aura up, and you're just fucking everyone.
Yeah, you prefer, I've noticed that with sort of across all your models really, you don't really seem to like the support piece. You want each model to be doing something, not sort of, do you think that's fair?
In a way. I don't like models overly much where they have the one thing and then they go home. One of the things I like about my current hunting team is that if, like, say I've got, you know, Jaykar, who's an absolute murderer, if he gets killed, if Chaka has to step in and do a bit of damage, he can actually get a fair, like, he's not helpless. Like, he's got a brute playbook. If he factor in singled out, he could be doing 4 damage a pop. So I don't lose a huge amount. Same for Hearn, same for Keener, same for Fahad. I never feel like there's that model who died and then my whole plan go to shit. I don't have that. Even Ratchet on the engineer, the thing I like about him is that he doesn't just tool up and then he's done. He can give the overclock, he can remove condition, he does a lot for the Mechanica. Ekton, even though she's got shit like Fire Blast and Black Earth, you kind of want her for the kinging, and if you can get into melee range, you don't really want to spend 2 influence a pop just putting out a Black Earth. On the initial turn, it's really good. You know, on that opener, for the opening, like, tooled up Black Earth, putting out 4 damage, pop, whatever. That can be good. But generally, the idea that once turn 1 ended, she kind of becomes kinging, maybe doing a bit of damage at a push. But in reality, you want to blow that influence on your actual killer model. You want your figure, you want your hooper. You want even your lucky to a certain extent to get in there, you know, pint pot, doing his fucking work. I find it a lot harder to bring her. Where Tapper, he even brings additional influence. He has his fat stack. Commanding aura just helps everyone no matter what.
It's just how you prefer to play the Brewers game, isn't it?
Yeah, just creating that bubble of power. And she has that bubble, but it's so refined into like that one area of just one person getting that buff. Legendary, a few people get buff. But really, that kind of her thing. I really like the new card. And in many ways, I like that they've turned her legendary into her character's play. Like, I've never played a Brew player and they've turned around and gone, okay, plus one defense for the, unlike maybe it's like Friday, you know, Friday when they hold the ball trying to push her to defend. Or maybe Mash, who've got like unpredictable movement and giving him loads of cool defense. Like, I think one of the play for Mash holding the ball, he gets extra defense near Ekton, or it might be extra armor, but it's something like that. She gives him then additional defense, so he dodging 2 inch away, then counterattacking with extra defense and pushing people, you know, out of the way, keeping the ball. The new card I like, okay, they've effectively taken heroic and legendary offer.
She's kept the heroic.
Oh yeah, but the
I think you're thinking of the empowering voice trait.
Yeah, empowering voice is gone.
The heroic hasn't changed.
Oh, the heroic came. Legendary, I mean, then. Yeah, empowering voice is gone, but they've given that to character play. Instead of, you know, you have to spend influence on it, but it's shit that's really worth having. Tooled up, great. Quick move, if you need it, great. Especially good on the opening turn, where you're going to have influence to spare. Not everyone's going to make it on the Brewer team.
Yeah.
And if you're playing a game to halfway competent opponent, they shouldn't be letting you swing away at them on that other turn.
So I don't know if it's just a lack of experience on my part from playing into Brewers, into Esters, sorry. Because obviously, as my regular opponent, when I've played into Brewers, it's been into your Tapper.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing a lot of people saying they've changed Esters. I'm seeing a lot of people saying they've taken who she is away from her. But I can really see that's different, is that she hasn't got that sort of Blast Earth and Fire Blast, because they've taken them off her. They're gone. She hasn't really got a replacement for them. Then, as for the back of the card, Glut Mass has become Resilience, same diff. Empowered Voice, yes, it's gone, but the speed and strength versions of them songs are just, now she can do both of them every turn, instead of picking one of the three songs. The only thing she's actually lost is the ability to give someone one plus one defense, which they could have given her Swift Stance, unless that's coming out of the game entirely. You know, we know Boiler lost it. We don't know if it's just he's lost it or if the game's lost it. Heroic play of Soothing Voice to Clear Conditions in a 3-inch pulse. That's exactly the same. The legendary she had was tied to Empowered Voice. So because that's gone, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And she, it's almost like, instead of being able to do Empowered Voice three times per turn, she can always put out Tooled Up and Quickfoot. She can put one of them out every turn.
Yeah.
And gaining Aria, which is just the trait that if you're in a 4 inches of her, you know, plus that 40 mil base she's got, your models can use their heroic plays for free. I mean, at first glance, from someone who hasn't, I've never played Brewers, I've never played Esters, and when I've played into her very few times, at first glance, it looks like all she's lost is the ability to chuck damage out from range. Everything else seems like they've kept her voices, they've just made them plays in a different, so she has to spend influence for them. So is that where the, I don't get Gub's explosion, I guess is my point.
A big part of it, I imagine, is that Blackster from Fireblast in the Brewer team is a unique element to that team. Like, you've got like a character range character player, but it's not dishing out damage without going heroic, ironically enough. And then they don't have like maybe a Stoker. Well, like he got like a flame blast or whatever it's called. But there aren't much in like range play. The Brewers were super helpless on that initial turn. The thing that makes like Estes unique in the Brewers is you get that initial fuck you opening turn.
Yeah.
You get to get a couple blasts and actually start doing damage and getting on the board early. And when I think people think of the identity, they do think of Empowered Voice like it's like super unique thing. But in reality, it is Tooled Up and Quickfoot. You have to play. You have to pay an influence tax for what are incredible abilities. Fly out, amazing ability. Tooled Up is great. For me, Tooled Up is like a model defining trait, or like a character breaks a lot of models. If Tooled Up wasn't on original Spigot, which I'm assuming it now isn't on original Spigot, like if she's got it, I doubt there are going to be two Tooled Up on the Brewer.
Someone did like that. They showed the picture of the season 4 launch pack you can buy.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you could see the front of cards, but they were quite far away. And some people have done like the enhance. So it looks like Spigot hasn't got Tooled Up.
Yeah, I assume he wouldn't have it just by virtue of her having it. I assume he doesn't. Just by learning that makes Veteran Spigot and Original Spigot a much harder choice now to between them.
Mm. Well, that's what they've done with. We've definitely seen it between O-Siren and V-Siren. So I think that's nice, you know, giving some of the models like that a little bit of love, you know, a little bit of attention to make that choice between original and veterans difficult. Whereas before, you know, sometimes it's kind of objectively correct.
Yeah, it feels like a no-brainer sometimes from some of the veteran models. I get that looping that range play early, but with stuff like Aria, you can get bigger extra movement, then you can put Quickfoot on. You can pick a model to add 4-inch of movement on. That's just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
You know, outside of super janky play, just Aria, bigger giving extra movement, Quickfoot, bang, someone's got an extra 4-inch.
Yeah.
Brewers do not suffer from, Brewers suffer from not having a great opening turn, which with Quickfoot now becomes a lot more doable, and they can get the Tooled Up benefit. I get that it's not having to pay an influence tax effectively, but for the most part, you're probably just going to be dropping Tooled Up now. One for Tooled Up, then she's actually going to do her job, which is fucking hitting people. Her playbooks are great now. She's gone from like her damage overall hasn't changed, but now she's getting momentum for actual fucking results.
Yeah.
What were before was like 2 damage at the top of her playbook. The best momentum damage you could look for was 2.
Yeah.
Now you get 3 at the top. You know, get the wrap, you're still getting good momentum. If you get the, you know, wrap and get a couple more hits, you get actually momentum 2 damage. But on your good wrap, you could do 5 damage momentically with no buff. If, you know, factoring in extra, you know, you pull crowd out and all that lot. So it becomes, for me, she's actually back on the board being more like a Brewer. Getting into the mix, helping people out. And Aria, like, yeah, she's leading, she's helping the people around her. Instead of just throw in an Empowered Voice at the very tip of where you can get it, and then try and maybe a couple of blaster for a fire blast, just to get a bit of damage on range and then not really do much. Like, it's now worth actually trying to get her into the mix, which is where, you know, Tapper shines as well. But I think generally, yeah, I'm really quite happy with changing. I think people are feeling a bit hard put by losing the range character play. Okay, I think a lot of people imagine in these scenarios where Brewer just go back to being completely helpless on the opening turn, where for me, I think now Quickfoot and yeah, Free Heroics are becoming a thing. I think it can open up basically a whole new world of opportunity has been opened up to the fucking Brewers now. It can really, I genuinely think we're going to keep on fucking new American janky playing just out of there.
Yeah. When we find out what all the heroics are, that could be a game changer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I only assume the heroics are going to get better. For me, when the Brewers were, when we knew King and Fall were coming, my initial feeling was that all the Brewers are going to get a slight buff or change, then Vet Decimate is going to come back down now that, you know, the patch of Vet Decimate is no longer needed. Shield will be brought down to reasonable level. And yeah, guys, reasonable level. Like, Vet Decimate is fucking out of control at the minute.
I think that's the least controversial thing you've ever said.
Yeah, when we talked to Aaron, like, he said something like, he didn't go, I played against the Brewer guy. He went, I played against Vet Decimate.
Yeah.
Like, that's how out of control she is at the minute. Yeah. Not much to say about it. I guess I'm just happy with it.
Yeah, yeah. American Podcast The Pitch. As they put it, are you Team Aria or Team Where?
Team Aria.
Yeah.
I love that character. I love that trait. Infinitely useful.
No.
It's a shame it doesn't apply to herself. But again, the amount of momentum.
You are the... You lead the charge on pay the fucking price. I think that's fair to say that she has to pay for her own heroic.
Yeah. I think it's one thing where almost always auras tend to affect the model they're within.
Mm.
So I get that, that's just like an extra caveat of like going, no, not her.
Oh, so she gets so you want her to have a free heroic? Just that she
Oh, fuck that.
So she can heal within a 3-inch pulse, so a 7-inch diameter, so 7 and a bit inch diameter circle, almost 8 inches. Everyone in there heals everything completely for free every single turn.
Yeah, why not?
That's fine.
I'm kidding. Yeah, fucking no, you're bit. When I first got Ari, I was almost a bit like... Ooh, that is very good. Very good. And before I was going to say too good, I kind of brought it back and went, nah, I think I'm going to leave it in the very good category.
Because you play Brewers, so.
I'm probably going to stick with Tapper. To be honest, I still really like Tapper. I like what he does. And not to mention that, I went for a lot of trouble painting that fucking model.
Yeah.
You know what? That's what I have for a new rule. If you've got a fully painted model, you know, like Texturecon, if they've got like a pattern of any kind on them, you get like fuck on tack.
If you've gone to the bother of drawing the tartan.
Yeah, if you get tartan, fuck on tack, that'd be a great rule. But yeah, really like it. Not a huge change in terms of the playbook and health department or general stats, like the character play and...
I don't know. I think obviously a health and stat line are basically unchanged. Like, the only change to her actual stat line is that she can now have a cap of 6 influence.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason she didn't have a cap of 6 influence before was that meant 3 fire blasts, you know? So that's why she's gained that other one to bring her in line with the majority of other captains. Playbook department, I think I'd call that a fairly substantial change, you know. Making the 2 damage hits momentous and giving her the momentous 3 on 4. Yeah, she's lost the 2 damage with a knockdown result, and yes, she's lost the 3 with a double push, but she's gained like momentous serious damage.
Yeah.
You know, she tools herself up. That's a 4 at the top of a book. 4 on 4 hits.
Yeah, and she can bring an extra point of influence now as well, which is nice. For me, she's doing what she's meant to be doing. Like, if I was rolling with the original Lecter, I'd likely, just to get the damage on the board, go for the non-momentous, more damaging roll.
Yeah.
But for me, in terms of what I'm effectively getting, nothing much is changing. I'm just getting momentum now.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like, and then on top of that, I'm getting the momentum, and I'm freeing up momentum with Aria. I think you could almost justify her having better non-momentum rolls now.
Yeah.
It'd make Aria gain so much momentum now. You can almost justify the original playbook, almost feels more justified.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, best of both all. And good. Hopefully it'll make her balance out what's happened more. But it's making me kind of look forward to seeing what Tapper got in her playbook.
Mm.
Yeah, cause for me, she's been made good enough now that I'd say, compared to King from 3 Tapper, I think she pushes over the edge to her being... I'd probably bring her into my new captain.
For your playstyle.
Unless Tapper got a little extra something to help him out. It's so hard to give up on commanding aura.
See, for me, I think it depends entirely what all the other heroics are. Because 4-inch aura on a 40mm base is pretty chunky. If you've got her in the middle, you know, she shouldn't be on a wing. So if you've got her in the centre, pushed relatively far forward, I'd imagine you want to be staying in your half. You know, you're still looking to scrum up. So probably in the middle, in your half, you're going to be hitting a fair few models with that aria.
there's no reason the majority of your team shouldn't be able to take advantage of that most of the time. Mm. The thing is, yeah, you didn't even start in. They just have to enter that aura at any point, and then they can blow the heroic card. Yeah, lovely. Great fucking player.
Yeah, there we go. All non-mascot models have a heroic play now on the Brewers.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Yeah. So that's us caught up with the Season 4 releases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the time we next tune in, I think everyone's going to be caught up on every Season 4 release.
Well, certainly a lot of them. Not all of them. Yeah. You know, the first week of the Season 4 drops will have begun.
Yeah.
This is something I've been looking forward to. This is something I've been looking forward to since Season 4 drop happened, because when I started playing Season 3, there was just this whole buzz of excitement about everything being new again, but it kind of didn't, I didn't get that because it was new to me anyway.
Yeah.
So now, this time I'm actually part of that excitement, feel like seeing everything happening as it's happening, it's going to be awesome. So this week, we're going to find out everything about the Union and the Order, the Engineers Guild, the Masons, the Blacksmith, the Farmers, the Morts and Catchers, and the Hunters and the Falconers, and that's all this week. And then by the end of next week, we'll have had everything else come out as well. It's going to be good.
Man, we're farming, and we're looking at that. I'm half tempted to see what the farmers change and play them. I kind of want to get, when they start getting revealed, I kind of want to get a Season 4 game in, effectively, when the cards start getting dropped.
Well, that's it, isn't it? We'll have all of the rules, and we'll start, and all the cards will start trickling out so you can start playing proper Season 4 games.
Yeah. So, I think, shit, next time we're recording, we might already have a Season 4 game under our belt.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll hopefully hear from everyone then.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've that's enough of talking Season 4. We, a couple of weeks ago, it was the WTC, loads of people were posting about it, and I was just going, oh man, I wish I'd applied when it was rolling around, you know. At the time, I wasn't very confident in my playing ability, a bit more confident now, so I think I'm going to apply for it next year. But just to sort of speak about that and speak about the hype, you know, who better to speak to about hype than Aaron Hype Train Wilson?
Yeah.
So we've got, we spoke to Mr. Hype Train a bit about WTC, got that coming up next, you'll hear that in a second. There's also a cheeky little bonus bit about you two talking Hunters.
Yeah.
But then I had to sort of grab the steering wheel and just pull us back on course.
Don't you hit it when one guy can't stand not being the centre of attention?
Says you. Fucking hell.
Well, like, I've already altered the Facebook to say firm podcaster Ryan with Alex.
So, that's about to happen now, so enjoy that. We've had a rehearsal, we've had a warm-up, you know, we're all feeling sort of loosey-goosey now, so let's smash
I'm ready.
Go.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Quick, and we're going to do an interview with Aaron Wilson, a.k.a. Forrest Rambo, like one of the premier hunters playing from the UK. Alex?
Basically, it's just all about WTC. It exploded, it was all over Gubs, all over Facebook, all over everything to do with Guild Ball, and got really jealous about not being there, not taking any kind of part, so this is me desperately trying to live through Aaron.
And welcome, Aaron.
Hey, guys. How are you guys?
Good, yeah. Second time lucky. We hit record
No problem whatsoever.
So, obviously, for the asking you this question for the first time, you know, how was WTC? How did you do?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was an experience that I would recommend if you can get there. Do it. Apply. Definitely do it. I really enjoyed it. I had a team of me with Hunters, Maria with Alchemist, and Connor with Fish. And we ended up winning three of our rounds and losing two. And we played 12 out of 46, which we were really happy with. Yeah,
that's
happy
great. With it. Yeah, positive ratio, that's the way to go.
Yeah, that's usually where I start from, going, if I'm going to break positive, I usually feel all right about it. But that's a fucking, that is a nasty team competition. Hunters, Alchemist, and Fish, that's just like every end of the spectrum just being pushed.
So you said that you, when you're going in, that you weren't sort of, I don't know how to put it, you say you weren't disillusioned with the idea that you were going to come home first place.
No, so we were fairly relaxed about it.
Yeah, so like there's a few people who might have been like me seeing it on Facebook and going, oh, that's great, but part of me was like, yeah, I want to go down for next, I want to put my name down for next year, but then I was also like, yeah, but I don't want to like be just a sandbag to the other two members of my team, you know. I'd want to go, but I'd want to go to have fun and not have the huge weight of expectations on my shoulders. Is there, like, when you apply, like how does that process work? Is there a way you can go, I want to go, but please don't expect to put the expectations of GB on me?
So first of all, to apply, there's actually a Facebook group, which is, I think it's literally called Team Great Britain / Guild Ball WTC, and if you join that group, they'll specifically post when to apply, how to apply, etc. So this year, well, last year, it was a Google form that you would fill out, and you would write a bit about yourself and your experience, and you'd send that off, and then the committee would then decide the captains, and then the captains and the committee would then decide the players.
Oh, awesome. So who's on the GB committee?
Last year, it was Greg Day, Andrew Jones, and I want to say Mike Myers, although he might have been on the actual WTC committee, but I did think he helped out deciding for us. But that's the committee that decided the captain, and then the four captains then had a discussion with the committee about the players.
Awesome.
That's why I'll never get an application safe thing, because the fact that Mike Myers could just immediately start getting Shrek meme.
It's tricky because we're quite lucky in the UK that there's so many good players. There were 12 spots this time. If I'm honest, I think if they had waited a little later in the year, I think there's actually better players than me, like Michael Coomber, who didn't get selected for Team UK. So I think to get onto Team UK, you have to just be an exceptional player. And if you're a casual player, you know, and you do fairly well at events but don't win, you could still apply. There's nothing to say you're not going to get on, but it's trickier. There's just so many good players in the UK. There's just a ton of talent. There are United Nations teams, which might be worth applying for if you're looking for a more casual experience, which is probably the better way to go. So United Nations teams are sort of, they try and get three different nationalities on the same team, and they're more like mercenary teams. So that might be a better way to go if you're looking for a more casual, less pressure experience, you know.
No, that's fun.
We should make up our own fake country and
enter Yorkshire.
Just in front of the Gilball country. Yeah, didn't you know that's north of Lithuania?
No, but I mean, to be fair with our team, like I said, we would have loved to have gone there and gone 5-0, but we were also realistic that between us, me, Con and Maria, before the WTC, had played two practice games between all three of us. And we were treated, and not that we didn't give the effort, we gave it our all when we were there, but we weren't under the impression that we would sort of beat Germany 1 or the really real top contenders. I think they're probably better than player than us. I don't think Connor and Maria will mind us saying that, like Met and Dominic and Timmy, etc. I think they are better player than us, and also they're probably more practiced than us.
That's the thing, whenever you see that Germany 1 are there, it's almost like when Tiger Woods was at his prime. Everyone knows they're playing for second place. You know, no one is under any illusion.
It's pretty mad as well, because on the Thursday night, Timmy dislocated his arm, so he basically had to play with one arm all weekend, and Christian Metz didn't turn up until like the Saturday morning, and yet they still won all their rounds, nearly 3-0. So
God.
I don't know what you could do to them apart from physically take them out.
Well, so it dislocated shoulder, he got physically taken out anyway.
Yeah, I mean, in one game, Timmy got 10 points from the clock, even with a dislocated shoulder.
What?
Yeah, I mean, what more can you do?
That was painful for a player to go for, like, going, like, how many more VP, or, like, 10 VP on the clock? Like, shit, man, what the fuck am I doing?
The worst thing is, they're all really lovely guys, so you can't even hate them. They're all really nice guys.
That made me feel even better at being in Norbert, and we're going, all born yesterday, you nice bastards.
And they're all really relaxed, and, oh, yeah, they're really nice people, and at the same time, amazing at the game. So, I mean, they're really good ambassadors for the sport, to be fair. I say sport, for the game, because they're awesome people.
There's one thing I did want to ask, though, is that there's been all this talk flying around. Everyone's been talking about WTC, team games, team that, team this, team that. I went to my first, well, we went to our first team tournament, I want to say early this year, might have even been late last year. And if we hadn't gone to that, I wouldn't have had any idea about how a team event runs. So could you just, like, just for people who maybe haven't been to one or don't know the sort of format of it, could you just give us a quick rundown of how, like, a team championship works?
Yeah, 100%. So, kindly Longshanks, big shout out to Sam, has now made a Longshanks that you can actually run a team event, because priorly you had to put a player in as the team and just do if they won or lost the round. But now you can actually run it through Longshanks, where you can put a team in and you can record the individual results of players as well as the team results. So big shout out to Sam for doing that. But the way it works is, obviously, you have a captain, which I was lucky enough to be our captain, and you have two other players. And when you are paired against another team, you show each other your team, and then of the three tables, one team team put one team down on the left-hand side blindly, and one team puts one team down on the right-hand side blindly. So there's two teams down at the moment, one of your team, one of theirs, you don't know what it is. Then you then flip them over, so now you know what team is on either, and then you decide to pair one of your remaining teams against the team that they've put down. To say we put down me as our first team, and they put down fishermen, we then flip them over and we'd see that we put down. So they would pair someone against my hunters, and we would pair someone against their fishermen, and then that's two of your teams down, and then your remaining team would then be put in the middle, and then they would play each other.
Cool. So, like, did you have any tactics going in? You know, you had hunters, fish, and elks. Is there any way you sort of tried to stack the deck in your favour with the picks?
What happened most of the time is Maria and Connor decided they didn't really want to play against what they had, so we put me down first. So four of the five games I went down first, and I think in our last round we put Connor down first. But I didn't really mind playing into any gilded hunters, so it worked out quite well. Mm. But our main thing was trying to get Maria into a team that she felt comfortable with, because alchemists have some really good matchups, also have some really poor ones.
Absolutely.
So our main focus was get Maria into something that she wanted to play, and I feel the hunters and fishermen are flexible enough that they don't really mind what they play. Yeah. Also, there's matchups they'd rather avoid, but I don't necessarily feel like it's bad enough that we have to avoid them, you know?
Mm. Not like there's no sort of like solid hard counter kind of thing.
No, I mean, Connor didn't want to play Veteran Decimate, but then neither did anyone.
Yeah.
And then when he did play Veteran Decimate, he won the game anyway, so he did fine.
Well, I'm thinking, like, how strong do you think the matchup factor is right now? I think the Hunter, like, have some good matchup, but I wouldn't say, if I had to scale it, I wouldn't say the Hunter have any, like, 8-2 or 9-1 matchup. I kind of have like a lot of 6-4 or maybe even a 7-3 at a push. Like, do you think matchup's like a really big factor?
I was actually speak about this to Jason, actually. Jason Mountain, who was on team 2, good buddy and an excellent guy. But we just sort of decided that we think that if you're a good enough player, you'll win it anyway. Don't really think that matchup are massively important. I just think that if you're a good enough player, you'll probably win the matchup.
Mm.
Like, I think Corsair is quite bad hunted, but in round 5, I won a game against Corsair 12-11. So I think if you're a good enough player, you'll probably win it anyway.
Yeah.
That's generally my view. There definitely are worse and good matchups, and I think Hunters are pretty well placed in a meta that I don't think they'd really... I think Corsair is favoured for Corsair, but I don't think, apart from that, anything 50-50 or worse for Hunters, and I think we'll get better with Gaffer.
Out of curiosity, in all of Guild Ball, who do you think has the worst matchup against what team? If you have to just, you know, match...
It's tricky, but I'd probably say Shark Ops against Shark is probably the worst. I don't see how Shark really wins that game.
Oh wow, so as soon as you said Ox against Shark, I honestly thought you were about to say I don't know how Shark doesn't win.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, sorry. I don't see how Ox.
Yeah.
I thought we'd go like, oh man, the opinions on this game are so varied. It's like, oh no, sorry, I was mistaken. Shark obviously dominated that match.
it's that thing, isn't it? It's like the 2-inch melee just sort of goes, nope.
Yeah,
and
the best they can do is hide the ball on Brisket, really. Mm. But I think that's one of the worst. I think Theron playing against Ox is also one of the worst, because you can totally nullify Ox for the whole game.
That's the problem with like sort of star strikers going into the Hunters.
Yeah, low
defense coupled with kind of average movement, you can affect volume. Mm.
That's the thing, he doesn't threaten very far, and outside of the legendary, he doesn't always kill a player in one go, whereas a player like Hammer, probably we've pulled up, will always kill a player.
Mm.
But Ox doesn't. But I think it's one of those things where also you're very biased in those, depending on the team you play. My view is very much of a Hunter's view, whereas I think if you play a different team, you have different ideas on matchups.
Yeah.
And it's the same factor, which is really funny. It's the same across the continent. Like, we would speak to a different team and we were like, oh, well, we think like we've got good matchups, and they'd be like, yeah, we think we have as well. We'd be like, oh, we
like, everyone goes in nice and positive.
Like, they'd think like, for example, like we got fishermen against morticians, we were like, oh, we're really happy with that, and then team Belarus were like, oh yeah, so are we were like, oh, we we thought we were good with that. So everyone's got a different idea of what matchups are good, which is good, because there's no set sort of pecking order.
I half wonder that. I thought that a big weakness in the community is that a lot of people have a really hard time when their team has a bad matchup. Their initial thought is to go, oh, that the other team's just really strong, or that maybe the matchup's more potent than it is. They have a hard time like imagining how the other teams do. They never go through the whole gamut of all the teams.
Yeah.
Imagine all the different matchups.
I certainly think some people get themselves in a very bad headspace before the game. And to be fair, I used to do that a lot. I used to sort of be, regardless of what team I was playing, I'd get put into a matchup and before the game started, I'd think, think, oh, you know what, I'm probably going to lose this because, you know, it's a bad matchup. And I think that's a bit of a trap, because I think as long as you play well enough, every matchup is easily winnable. You just got to make the right decisions.
Well, yeah, I have a counter attitude, which I'm quite going, if I have a bad matchup, I'll go, I'll show you how bad a matchup this is. if this is such a good matchup for you, you're going to look like such an idiot when I win.
Yeah, nah.
How's your tournament attitude generally now? Are you going in positive, or have you got any getting into the tournament killer mindset?
No, I'm pretty blasé about tournaments, if I'm honest. Like, a year ago, I was very serious, and I'd almost rage hard, and I'd bum out on losses and stuff. But I've had some stuff happen in my personal life that, like, I had a surgery and it nearly went wrong, etc. And it all put it into perspective, and I'm very relaxed about all sort of war dollies now. At the end of the day, it's just a game. I go home to my family, they still love me, my parents are still alive, you know what I mean? Like, if I win a game or lose a game, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things.
Wait a minute, you're trying to have fun with a game.
I know, yeah.
Podcast or a game out of here.
And at the end of the day, the best thing about events is the people.
I wouldn't
travel if the community wasn't so good. I mean, apart from Jason Mountain, top dickhead, everyone else is excellent.
Absolutely, completely agree.
100%.
Yeah,
he's the best guy, but also top level dickhead at the same time.
That's what you're saying there about a bit like travelling for the community. I wanted to say like about the WTC. Is it a case of that as soon as you get there you go, oh shit, yeah, just must be something about this game and the way it's played?
It's just the best experience. Like, I turned up on Friday, and obviously because there was the War Machine WTC at the same time, and I used to play a lot of War Machine. It was just walking around like a hotel full of people. Like, it's like we'd booked a hotel out with a bunch of friends, and we just there for the weekend.
Oh, amazing!
So you're just walking around, you're like, oh, I haven't seen you in a few years. How are you? And then like on Friday evening, because I saw Ben Downton, who played for the United Arab Emirates, and we played in the Harlow event. I was like, how you doing, buddy? And he was like, do you want to play a game? And I was like, oh, there's no tables. So we just got one of the hotel tables, a little 3x3, and we're playing in the foyer, and people like the hotel staff are looking at us like, hmm. But that was amazing. And we sat around with all the Gilbert, like Team England, and I met Team Australia for the first time, who were awesome. I got to meet a lot of the USA guys, so, like, a lot of people who you speak to on Twitter that you're never going to meet unless you travel to their country. It was just like a big collaboration of like the big podcast. Like, I got to play actually Mike Clean from the Alan Tom Call Precision, and he was an amazing guy. I got to meet the Double Dodge podcast, who were awesome. It was just like a weekend full of your best buddies playing Guild Ball in a really relaxed atmosphere. I couldn't say a bad word about it. It was awesome.
Amazing.
Well, if we're going to insist on bad words, what's the worst, you have to name names by the way, what's the worst tournament experience you've ever had then? What's like a game where you're just like, whoa?
It's tricky. I know what game it is, but I'm not going to divulge it. But there was one game where I specifically did not have the best time during the game, but that's all I'll say.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, so it was your fault then?
Oh, no. It was just a very tense game, and I didn't necessarily come out of the game feeling like I had an enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
Man, I go for that all the time.
That's every time I play Ryan, that.
Yeah.
Fucking, I love that, though. Like, that's the thing. You know how I know I love this game? Is that if I didn't give a shit, I'd get nowhere near as angry.
Yeah.
Like, if it can't get me mad, then there's no point in me even playing.
So I will say, I've only ever had that one bad game. Every other game, I've enjoyed.
Awesome. Oh. That's great.
Apart from playing,
I wanted a story. I wanted tables getting flipped over and broken mugs.
We wanted full rage quit riot in the early days.
Well, I tell you, I did have a really. I tell you this story because it's not Guild Ball, but I did properly rage quit, and it was the Welsh Masters for War Machine in 2016. And we started my turn one, and it was all going fine. And turn two, I started rolling badly, and I was like, I got a bit annoyed. This was in my rage days as well. I was a lot angrier here, so I got a bit annoyed, and I was like, fine. And then turn three, also pretty poorly, and I was like, oh yeah. I started getting visibly like, this is bullshit. And then turn four, I can continue to roll badly, but it was really close, and that was the end of the game. And then there was a measurement that if I was within a certain range of an objective, I would have won, and if I wasn't, I lost. And I wasn't in by like 0.1 inches, and I visibly shouted, this is bullshit, and walked out of the venue. So there you go. That was my proper rage moment, and I was called Rage Train for a few years after that.
They've changed stations to become the Hype Train.
Yeah, now I've changed stations. I was A Train for a while, and now I've evolved into the Hype Train.
Well, to be fair, Calm Train doesn't really roll off the top of
it. No, exactly. Yeah, I am really excited for season four, though. I was getting a bit jaded with the game prior to the WTC, but that really relit my fire, and now I'm really excited to see season four and what that's going to look like.
As
the resident, you know, current Hunters expert that we've got on the podcast at the moment, what do you think of scatter changes?
Ooh, yeah, I think he's pretty spicy. I think now, definitely, rather than just try and play matchups where I don't think Ferron is necessarily great but good enough, I would definitely be playing Scafer into, example, Butchers and Farmers and some matchups where I want that goal scoring, because now I think he really does do goal scoring fairly well.
I completely agree with that. I very much had the moment of looking at Scafer card through FIFA 3 and going, why would I even bother? Like, Ferron almost outkicked him.
Yeah, with Ferron's, like, running extra speed, and he's got a double dot on two hit, it's actually fairly manoeuvrable. Like, I played Scrubby in a final of some event a year ago, and I was playing against his Farmers, and I managed to get a really janky goal just by taking a double dodge into another player, pushing a player, taking another double dodge. Like, Ferron really gets around. His playbook is excellent, and he's actually surprisingly good at moving himself about.
I'd argue Ferron's probably one of the more, he's not that explosive, he doesn't have the hammer factor, but he's one of the more flexible, probably one of the most flexible captains in the game at the moment.
He's excellent. I wouldn't be surprised if he, though I think actually he's getting a bit worse. I think Snipe is being made once per turn, or it's being made back to Arrow to the Knee, I'm not sure. I think they said that in the engineer's blog, but no, I think I wouldn't be surprised to see that, because he's very, very good.
Yeah, but I think on the Calvo reveal, did they give Calvo Arrow? I think Calvo still has Arrow to the Knee, and I think per turn anymore. So I don't know. They might just make Snipe once per turn, although I don't know why they do that if the only difference between Snipe and Arrow to the Knee once per turn, not per turn.
Yeah.
The push Ferron. I hope they'll change him.
No, but I think Scafer is really good. Like, you have to actually give a text to the ball against well now, because she can walk up and get dodges everywhere. So
yeah, that blessing of the Moon Goddess now for the free. getting that amount of dodge.
The only thing that I'm nervous about is that while Scafer was actually always okay at getting the ball, the problem was that players like Ulfa or Egret or Original Hearn or Veteran Hearn or, you know, Veteran Mink, their tackles aren't that reachable. So those Scafer can go get the ball. The rest of your team will still struggle on ball retrieval. So if you can hide it from Scafer, for example, on a unpredictable movement player that you're not going to let someone dodge into them, you're still going to struggle to retrieve the ball. But that said, I'm definitely going to give her a go. 100%.
Good. What direction do you want Hunter to go in for King from Fall then? What do you think needs changing, if anything at all?
Interesting. I think it's tricky because I don't necessarily think every guild should have everything. So I think that the fact that the Hunters lack a bit of ball retrieval, I don't think is a bad thing. I don't think every guild should be able to play a 3-0 game and a 6-0 game in the same guild.
Love this guy.
I think they could do with a dead. That said, Egret, now that she dodges 2 inches and she's got a one damage tackle on her third playbook, so if you charge and hit that, you've got a one tackle damage and a 2-inch dodge, so that makes Egret actually a bit better. I'd like to see Ulfa get a bit better. If he somehow gets more tack and retains his tackle on 2, that'll be a big thing, because he's got Where Do You Go, so getting him into places where the ball is will be good.
It'd be nice if Ulfa was usable.
I just think if he was, I don't know, it's tricky, because I really don't like his tack rule, that if you're tack 4 and you get plus 2 if someone isn't moving 4 inches, because I find it's actually very easy to negate that as the opponent's player, and as the tack 4 all 4 is basically unplayable, so I would like to just see him maybe be given tack 5.
The idea that what's he called, Lone Hunter for the pushers, the idea that is somehow meant to be viewed as a buff, it's like going, if you're not near anyone, he's practically normal. It's like, yeah, like attack is so low.
Tactics would be above average for a striker, I agree, but if you look where his tackle is placed on 2, missed his tack 4 with a tackle on 1, Vitriol is tack 5 with a tackle on 1, so if he was tack 6 with a tackle on 2, it's not that much different to being tack 4 with a tackle on 1.
The idea
that you have to do damage just to become what most strikers are by default.
I like his design. I don't personally think it's been executed very well. I don't think it really worked as a player. I did play with around him for a while, and if you get to receive, he's pretty good for a turn 1 goal. You can throw a snowball at him, you can dodge into fast ground, and then you can sprint 9, Where Do You Go, and then you should get a goal. But sort of that's, you could do it with any player, like Veteran Minx can do that. You know, Egret can do that, Gaper could do that herself, so I'd like to see him get some love. I know Veteran Hearn, I think he should get some love, but no, we'll see. I think as a team they've got everything they need. I don't think they should be given like some amazing ball retrieval, because then they're just going to be the same as every other team. So just the players they have that don't see play, I'd like to see them get a bit of love, and that's it pretty much.
I agree with that kind of completely. I think they're a really great guild, and like the price like the price you pay for playing the skills is not being able to get the ball back and then leaving a lot of the team to do. But their damage potential, and depending on the model, their goal scoring potential really isn't bad at all.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can easily get two goals. It's not that, if your opponent releases the ball, getting a counter goal is no problem, because you're typically in the middle of the table. You have midnight offerings, or I always nearly always have midnight offerings to move players around, and players like Jay Carr and Ferron and Veteran Minx and Hearn, they can all get about, so getting return goals isn't a problem. Their only real problem is if they put a ball on someone, say they put the ball even on Quinn, who's 4-1 in cover, your whole team's pretty much going to struggle to retrieve it.
Yeah.
Which isn't really, I don't think really it's a problem, because I think when the guild has so many pros, having a few cons is really how guilds should be. So.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. Yeah. I didn't want to dive in there. You guys seem to be enjoying talking about the hunters. I just wanted to grab the wheel and just veer us back straight towards the WTC for a moment.
Can't get over the WTC, can I?
I really want to go next year. So for someone like me who's seen all the hype about it, got really excited about it, and I'm like, I'm definitely going to put my name forward for it next year. I don't think I'll get picked. You know, I know that there's, like you said earlier, Aaron, there's so many good players that it must be hard, like, to make that decision and you know, if you don't quite make the cut, you know, it's going to be a bit disappointing, isn't it?
Where is it held?
It's in Belgium next year, is that right?
Yeah, Belgium next year, or is Poland this year?
Do you have any sort of advice for anyone who's seen how great it was and wants to, like, get involved?
I think that my best advice would be just not necessarily make yourself known, but just put the effort in. Go to an event and try and improve, I guess. I mean, I'm still a very average player. I was lucky to be picked for the team, and I've still got loads to learn. And I think really everyone in Guild Ball is always learning. But I think the best you can do is attend tournament, try and improve. And at the end of the day, if you attend tournaments and you improve and you win, and suddenly you're up there on Longshanks, because Longshanks isn't the only thing that's used for WTC. Longshanks is something that will be looked at when you apply, but it won't be like, oh, you've got this rating on Longshanks, you're not getting in 100%. It's just something that will be taken into account. So if you're going to apply and suddenly last year maybe you were ranked 60th and you've made, or say 50 or 60 or whatever, and you've made it to rank 40 or 30, they'll be like, well, this guy's, you know, they're putting in the effort, they've tried to improve. I just say repetition. Like War Machine, Guild Ball really will reward repetition. Just playing games, knowing your playbooks, knowing your matchups, knowing your guild, I think it's really the best way to go. So just practice, really.
So your advice to anyone who wants to think about WTC, might, you know, might put their name forward, is get good.
I suppose that's what it comes down to. It's not just about having a good Longshanks rating, though, or it's not just about, it's also about being a good ambassador for the game and being someone that you'd be happy to say, oh, they're representing, when you go to the tournament, you're obviously representing the country, and the committee will want people that they're happy to send out, knowing that they're going to put in themselves in a good place for Great Britain as well.
Mm.
So it's a bit about being a good player. You know, obviously if you go to 10 events and you lose all four of them and you're 0-40, you're going to have less of a chance than if you go to 10 events and you win 10 of them and you're 40-0. So
yeah,
it's a mix.
What if that guy is really good at having a good time?
I think you need to balance that between being a good ambassador for the game and at the same time giving Great Britain their best chance of getting a podium.
Absolutely. Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you apply, the worst you get is you get a kind response saying, we really appreciate your time, but you haven't made a selection, and you go on with your life. So I don't see why you wouldn't apply, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
You go on with your life, Aaron. They're going to be some
It might emotionally scar you, but no. I would definitely recommend, if you can apply for any team, United Nations, etc., give it a go. Because if you get to go, you will absolutely love it.
That's amazing. A ringing endorsement.
Yeah. 100%. And a big shout out to Kim and Steve, who organised it this year, because it was run flawlessly. It was all just done really professionally. Everyone had a good time. So those guys really deserve the credit, because they really put on a good show.
Amazing.
I'll tell you what, the drinking in Poland must have been great.
There was very, very, very drunk people Friday night. But I don't drink, so I was safe.
I bet you had a great round Saturday morning.
Yeah. We were quite lucky that Connor drinks, but he does it more of a social sort of, he likes to taste, not to get drunk. And Maria, she can hold her drink. So we were all pretty solid Saturday.
No, I think that's the tactic. That is the tactic, isn't it?
But that said, Germany were drunk the whole week before and still won.
Oh, and practice do make it perfect.
Yeah. And we actually played 5 different countries, which was really nice. So yeah, if you can get down there, make it so.
I half wonder about that, how the other Met-Elfin countries do. Like, I half wonder if, like, the brewer call, Like, you know, just a really middle-tier team just running rampant in one country.
Yeah, the Fishermen were the most popular guild by far. And then Union and Brewers were there in numbers. And everything else sort of petered out.
Well, I'm not going to fail, you know?
So, like, what was it like sort of playing into different metas? Because, I mean, it can be quite jarring, like, being in the north. When you play someone from the south of England, it can be quite sort of, oh, my God. So what was it like playing people from different countries?
First of all, it was amazing to meet so many different people. Because when there was a point in Guild Ball where I'd probably go to an event every weekend, and for 2 months I'd go to an event in the UK every weekend, and it's lovely, but you would just see the same people every event. So it's really nice to sit down to a player and you never played, you have no idea how they're going to play, you have no idea of play style, and it's just really nice to meet new people. And it was really interesting, like I was saying before, because people have very different ideas of what's good against what. So when we were pairing and we were like, oh, we think we should put morticians into this fisherman, they were thinking the same thing. So obviously they thought it was good for them and we thought it was good for us. And the language barrier, well, there really wasn't one. Everyone there spoke really good enough English for it to be a really pleasant experience. One thing I would say is that there's definitely, like, some of the smaller teams, like, we played round one, we played Belarus, and there were really, really nice people, but like, I got a Hunter Mirror match and they said, the guy I was playing had never played a Hunter Mirror match, and their blacksmith player got paired into Maria and he said, I've never played against Alchemist. So there were some really new teams there. Wow. But at the same time there was like Germany 1, so the level of players, not everyone there is an experienced seasonal 40-0 player. Like, there were different range of players there as well, which is really nice.
Awesome. It sounds great.
If don't make GB cut, I'm gonna have a go at United Nations next year.
I'm only thinking, hitting up the bank in Belgium, that's a bigger time.
Now, like I say, there's nothing, the worst you do if you apply, you get told no, and that's it, so why not?
Absolutely.
I just assume Belgium for like a Willy Wonka chocolate patch.
Have you got any more like closing thoughts, anything else you wanted to say, Aaron?
A big thank you to my team for making the experience as enjoyable as possible. We all shared the same sort of relaxed attitude. We all went in there for a positive experience and we all loved it. So big shout out to Maria and Connor, you're the best. And a big shout out to Kim and Steve for running it flawlessly. That was amazing. A big shout out to Team GB because you were all awesome and I enjoyed every second with you. And a big shout out to everyone in the Guild Ball community, really. You all bosses.
Oh, how nice.
Hey, I'm part of that community.
You are a boss, Ryan. You are a boss.
Oh, cheer, I do want to ask one more thing. What are you most looking forward to about Greencom 4?
Oh, just the excitement of everything being new again. Not that the meta currently isn't solved. People are still doing different things, but as a general rule of thumb, we know what most guilds do. We know what most guild 10 are going to be, and we know what to expect from the table. But season 4 completely opens it up again to be like, you go to an event and someone will play Hammer, and you've not played against him yet, and you'll be like, woo, what's this going to do? So that's what I'm really looking forward to.
I'm looking forward to the moment for like, oh man, whole new, what's Hammer going to do now? Holy shit.
There's going to be loads of games where you're like, oh, so he does that. Oh, great, great.
Do you mean he can have 8 influence?
Yeah. But I think that's going to be the excitement of trying out and testing it all over again is going to be the most exciting thing for me.
I think I completely agree, because when I first started playing, it was the very, very start of season 3, and there was just this sort of constant buzz of people, like the forums like were just on fire with people saying, oh, if you try this, you know, like people discovering like new tech from models they've been playing for ages. It's great.
Yeah, 100%.
I think I can go now to end on. Aaron, where can we find you?
I'm on Twitter, and what is my, I don't even know what my tag is anymore. It's Aaron Wilson AOS, awkward, but Aaron Wilson AOS is my Twitter tag, and I'm on Facebook, and I'm often on the Steamforge forums or trolling people on garbage about how emotional they are about card changes, so I'm sure you'll see me about.
How many times have you cried about the season 4 reveals?
You know what, I don't really care. I mean, it's just war delis.
Oh, like, that's a good way to follow up that paper. Looking forward to season 4. Yeah, good shit, crying time. Well, how do you think? I'm not that bothered.
I think at the end of the day, some things will be worse, some things will be better, some things will be the same, and I'll carry on to enjoy the game. So.
Aaron, dude, thanks for coming on and having a chat with us. I'm looking forward to playing you on the table at some point.
100%. Thanks for having me, guys. I really
find out who the true hunter is.
Yeah, there can only be one, Ryan. There can only be one.
And that one's Aaron. Lovely guy, innit? Yeah. I love Aaron. I think
something I actually said afterwards when we stopped recording. I've met Aaron before, met him at BonesCon, but didn't play him. But I was playing a game, and I was with my farmers, and I was like going, oh, should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? And I was looking at, I think it was a bushel going for an I'm open to go for a goal run, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I should do it. You know, it's not great odds on this pass. You know, the model I'm passing from is engaged. You know, they're gonna be losing the dice, and it was a casual game, so that's why people were talking. And someone went, yeah, it's only like a 32% chance you'll get it or something like that. And Aaron just went, nah, 50-50, you get it or you don't. And that has been, like, that's just been a core part of my Gilboa play style since then. 50-50, yeah, you get it or you don't. people do, like, breaking down dice maths to, oh, no, well, you know, there's actually a this percent chance. I'm like, nah, 50-50, come on. So, yeah, love that. Taking that on board, yeah. So next time we speak to you, we'll be probably talking about Season 4.
We'll be
right?
Season 4 veteran.
Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, hope you enjoyed the episode. Mm. We'll catch you next time. I love the navigating. They are perfectly balanced. I love the navigating. I love the navigating. I love the navigating. They are perfectly balanced. Perfectly balanced.